Hey there, market enthusiasts. Welcome to a very special edition of the SD Panthers Market Insights podcast. I'm Farah.
And I'm Jordan. And today, we're doing something completely different. Folks, we're ditching the charts and tickers for a moment.
Don't worry, they'll be back tomorrow.
Because today, we're talking about something that every successful investor has in common. Something that separates the amateurs from the professionals.
What's that?
They read. Warren Buffett reads 500 pages a day. Bill Gates reads 50 books a year. Charlie Munger says he's basically a book with legs walking around.
That's such a visual. But Jordan's absolutely right. These billionaire investors didn't get where they are by watching CNBC all day or following Twitter. Stock tips. They read. They study. They learn continuously.
And with 2025 well underway, we wanted to give you the ultimate reading list, 7 books that can literally transform your approach to investing. Whether you're managing a $1 million portfolio or just starting with your first $100.
Whether you're a complete beginner who's never bought a stock, or a seasoned trader managing a 7-figure portfolio, these books have something valuable to teach you.
And here's the best part. We're not just listing titles and saying, quote, read this, unquote. We're going to tell you exactly what you'll learn from each book. The key principles, the actionable strategies, and most importantly, how to apply it to your portfolio today in 2025.
Because some of these books were written decades ago, but the principles are timeless. And we're going to show you how they're actually more relevant now than ever.
So grab a pen and paper, or just remember to check the show notes, because we're about to drop some serious knowledge. All right, Farah, should we jump right in?
Let's do it. Book number 1.
One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch.
Ooh, starting with an absolute classic. I love this book, Jordan. This is one of the first investing books I ever read, and it completely changed how I look at stocks.
Right? So here's why this book is essential. Peter Lynch managed the Fidelity Magellan Fund from 1977 to 1990. During that time, he beat the S&P 500 in 11 out of 13 years. His average annual return? 29%.
That's absolutely insane. Like, to put that in perspective, if you had invested $10,000 with Peter Lynch in 1977, by 1990 you would have had over $280,000. The S&P 500 would have only given you about $60,000.
Exactly. He crushed the market. And the crazy part is, his strategy isn't complicated at all. It's not some complex algorithm or insider information.
His main principle is invest in what you know. He calls it finding stocks in your everyday life. You go to the mall. You notice a store is always packed. People are carrying out bags. There's a line at the register. That could be a stock opportunity.
My favorite Lynch story is how he discovered Dunkin' Donuts. He literally just noticed the coffee was really good. The prices were reasonable. And every morning the parking lot was completely full. So he researched the company. Saw they were expanding rapidly. Profits were growing. And he invested.
And he made millions from that one observation. The book introduces this concept he calls 10-baggers. Stocks that go up 10 times in value. He found dozens of them just by paying attention to businesses he encountered every single day.
And here's what's brilliant about Lynch's approach. He categorizes stocks into 6 different types. Slow growers. Stalwarts. Fast growers. Cyclicals. Turnarounds. And asset plays. Each category requires a different strategy and has different risk profiles.
That's so useful. Because people think you just buy good companies. But Lynch says no. You need to understand what kind of company it is. A fast-growing tech startup needs to be analyzed completely differently than a mature dividend-paying utility company.
Right. And he gives you specific metrics to look for in each category. For fast growers, he wants to see 20 to 25% annual earnings growth. For turnarounds, he looks at debt levels and whether the company has enough cash to survive the turnaround process.
So for our listeners in 2025, how do we apply this? What's the Lynch approach look like today?
Great question. Look, you're using AI tools every day, right? Maybe ChatGPT, or Midjourney, or some productivity app. You're shopping on certain e-commerce platforms. Maybe you've noticed a new restaurant chain expanding rapidly in your area, or a retail store that's always busy.
Or think about your kids. What apps are they obsessed with? What games are they playing? What brands do they want?
Exactly. Lynch would say investigate those companies. Pull up their financial statements. Are they profitable? Do they have a competitive advantage? Are they growing revenue and earnings? Do they have manageable debt?
I think about companies like Nvidia. A lot of gamers knew about Nvidia's graphics cards years before Wall Street caught on to the AI story. If you had applied Lynch's principles and invested in what you knew back in 2020, you'd be up like 20 times your money by now.
Or Costco. People love shopping there. The stores are always packed. They have incredible customer loyalty with their membership model. And it's been one of the best performing stocks for 2 decades. That's pure Peter Lynch investing.
The key insight from Lynch, and this is really important, is that you don't need an MBA from Harvard. You don't need insider information. You don't need to work on Wall Street. You just need to pay attention to what's working in the real world.
Because Wall Street analysts often miss things. They're stuck in their offices looking at spreadsheets. But you're out there in the real world. You see which restaurants have lines out the door. You see which apps your friends are using. You see which products are flying off the shelves.
That's your competitive advantage as an individual investor. Use it.
Key takeaway from One Up on Wall Street. The stock market isn't this mysterious, complicated thing that only professionals can understand. Great investment opportunities are literally all around you if you just open your eyes and do a little homework.
Love it. All right, book number 2. The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham.
Okay, this is the book. Like, if you only read one investing book in your entire life, this is probably the one. Warren Buffett calls it the best book on investing ever written.
That's quite an endorsement.
Right? And Buffett's not exactly a lightweight in the investing world. First published in 1949. But it's still incredibly relevant today. Benjamin Graham basically created the entire field of value investing.
And the core principle is margin of safety, correct?
Exactly. Graham says you should only buy stocks when they're trading significantly below their intrinsic value. That way, even if you're wrong about some of your assumptions, if the company doesn't grow as fast as you expected, if the economy has a hiccup, you're still protected because you bought it cheap enough.
It's like buying a dollar for 50 cents. Even if it turns out that dollar is only worth 75 cents, you still made 50% on your money.
Perfect analogy. And Graham makes this really important distinction between investment and speculation. An investment, he says, is based on thorough analysis. It promises safety of principal plus an adequate return. Everything else is speculation, which is basically gambling.
Which is so important in 2025, with all these meme stocks. Crypto volatility, SPACs, NFTs. People confuse gambling with investing. They see something going up and they jump in without any analysis.
100%. And Graham has this whole chapter on the defensive investor versus the enterprising investor. The defensive investor wants good returns with minimal effort. Graham's advice? Buy a diversified portfolio of blue chip stocks or an index fund. Hold for the long term. Rebalance annually. Done.
That's probably the right approach for 90% of people.
Absolutely. But then there's the enterprising investor. Someone who's willing to put in the work. Do the research. Analyze financial statements. Really dig into companies. Graham gives specific criteria for these investors too.
Like what?
He wants to see strong balance sheets. Debt to equity ratio under a certain level. Consistent earnings growth over at least 10 years. P ratio below a certain threshold. Dividend payment history. He's very specific and very conservative.
And then there's Mr. Market, which is one of the most famous concepts from the book. This imaginary business partner who shows up every day wanting to buy your shares or sell you his.
And Mr. Market is totally bipolar.
Completely. Some days he's euphoric. Everything is amazing. The future is bright. And he's offering you crazy high prices for your shares. Other days he's depressed. The world is ending. Everything is terrible. And he's desperate to sell you shares for pennies.
But here's Graham's point. You're not obligated to trade with Mr. Market. You can just ignore him. You can tell him to go away. Your stocks are worth what they're worth based on the underlying business fundamentals, not based on Mr. Market's mood swings.
Which is basically saying don't let market emotions control your investment decisions. When everyone is greedy and euphoric, that's probably when you should be cautious. When everyone is fearful and panicking, that might be the time to buy.
Exactly. Be fearful when others are greedy. And greedy when others are fearful. That's pure Graham philosophy. In 2025, with social media, 24/7 financial news, Reddit forums, Discord channels, Mr. Market is louder than he's ever been.
Everyone's screaming about what's hot, what's crashing, what you need to buy right now. It's constant noise.
And this book teaches you to tune all of that out. Focus on value, not price fluctuations. Do your analysis. Buy with a margin of safety. Hold for the long term. Let the fundamentals work in your favor.
Key takeaway from the intelligent investor. Invest based on fundamental value, not market emotions. And always, always, always maintain a margin of safety. Don't pay full price for anything. Wait for the sale.
All right, book number 3. A Random Walk Down Wall Street by Burton Malkiel.
This one's controversial, right? Because it kind of goes against what Peter Lynch was saying.
Very controversial. Because Malkiel basically argues that you can't beat the market consistently. He says stock prices follow what's called a random walk, meaning past movements cannot predict future movements. The market is basically unpredictable.
So he's saying technical analysis doesn't work? Looking at charts and patterns?
He's very skeptical of technical analysis. He's also skeptical of active management. Stock picking. Trying to time the market. His main argument is that markets are efficient. All available information is already reflected in stock prices immediately.
So by the time you hear about some news, by the time you see a chart pattern, thousands of other people have already acted on that information.
Exactly. And the price has already adjusted. So what's his solution if you can't beat the market?
Index funds.
Exactly. Buy a low-cost S&P 500 index fund and hold it forever. Just own the whole market. He shows data. Decades of data. Proving that over long periods, most actively managed funds underperform the index.
The numbers are actually pretty damning. I think it's something like 90% of active fund managers fail to beat the S&P 500 over 15 years. And over 20 years, it's like 95%.
Right. And when you factor in fees, it's even worse. If you're paying 1 to 2% in management fees every year, that compounds against you massively over decades. You're fighting an uphill battle before you even start.
So does this mean we should all just buy index funds and stop trying? Give up on stock picking entirely?
Well, Malkiel would probably say yes. But here's the nuanced view. I think both Malkiel and Lynch can be right. For most people, especially beginners, especially people who don't want to spend hours researching companies, index funds are probably the best choice. Low fees, instant diversification, proven long-term returns of about 10% annually.
But there's still room for individual stock picking if you're willing to really put in the work. A la Peter Lynch.
Right. Malkiel is saying, if you're not going to do deep, thorough research, if you're just going to pick stocks based on tips or hunches or what's trending on social media, just index, you'll probably do better. Lynch is saying, if you are willing to do the work, use your unique insights and observations, really understand businesses, you can find opportunities that the market has mispriced.
So the 2025 application is probably build your core portfolio, like 70 to 80%, with low-cost index funds. Get that market return. Set it and forget it. Then maybe use 20 to 30% for individual stocks if you've actually done your homework.
Perfect strategy. And even Buffett, who learned from Graham and is obviously a stock picker, says that for most people, a low-cost S&P 500 index fund is the best investment.
Key takeaway from a random walk down Wall Street: beating the market is extremely difficult. Very few people can do it consistently. So don't pay high fees for active management. Index funds are your friend. And if you're not willing to do serious research, just index.
All right, book number 4. The Little Book of Common Sense Investing by John Bogle.
If Burton Malkiel made you interested in index funds, John Bogle literally invented them.
He's the godfather of index investing. Founded Vanguard in 1975 and created the first index mutual fund available to individual investors. And people thought he was absolutely crazy.
Why would anyone want average returns? That's what people said.
Exactly. But Bogle's response was brilliant. He said, the average investor, by definition, will earn average returns. That's just math. The question is, will you earn the market's return before costs? Or will fees, trading costs, taxes reduce your returns to below average?
And the data shows that after fees, most investors get below average returns.
Exactly. The book is super readable. It's short, it's clear, and it's absolutely packed with data backing up his arguments. His main themes are: costs matter enormously. Time is your friend. Impulse is your enemy. And simplicity wins over complexity.
Let's talk about costs in detail, because I think people really underestimate how devastating fees can be over time.
Huge issue. Bogle shows that if you invest $10,000 and earn 7% annually for 50 years, you'd have about $294,000. Sounds pretty good, right?
Not bad.
But if you paid just 2% in fees annually, you'd end up with only $132,000. So fees cut your returns by more than half over that time period.
Wait, so a fee that sounds tiny, just 2% a year, cuts your lifetime returns in half?
In half, because it compounds. Every year you're paying 2% on a bigger and bigger balance. And that 2% you paid can't compound in your favor anymore. It's gone. It's in the fund manager's pocket.
That's devastating. That's literally over $150,000 lost to fees.
Right. And Bogle's point is, active fund managers aren't giving you an extra 2% return to justify that fee. On average, they're underperforming the index. So you're paying 2% to get worse returns than you could get for free with an index fund.
Bogle's philosophy is really simple. You can't control what the market does. You can't control whether stocks go up or down in any given year. But you can control your costs.
So minimize fees. Vanguard's index funds charge like 0.03%. Some Fidelity funds are literally zero. Minimize trading because every trade costs money in commissions and spreads. Minimize taxes by holding long term instead of trading frequently.
In 2025, we have even more low-cost options than Bogle did. Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab, even Robinhood has index funds now. There is literally no excuse to pay high fees anymore.
None. And Bogle also talks about staying the course. Don't panic when markets drop. Don't get greedy when markets soar. Just keep investing consistently. Dollar cost averaging. Holding for decades.
The tortoise beats the hare. Slow and steady wins the race.
Exactly. Key takeaway from the little book of common sense investing. Costs are the enemy. Every dollar you pay in fees is a dollar that can't compound for you. Stay the course with low-cost index funds and let compound interest do its magic over decades.
Beautiful. All right, we're switching gears now. Book number 5, The Bond King. How One Man Made a Market, Built an Empire, and Lost It All, by Mary Childs.
Finally, a book about bonds. Everything so far has been stocks, stocks, stocks.
Right? And this is fascinating because, honestly, most investors, especially younger investors, completely ignore bonds, but they're actually a crucial part of any diversified portfolio.
Especially as you get older and need more stability and income. You can't be 100% in stocks when you're 65 and about to retire. You need some ballast, some stability.
So this book is a biography of Bill Gross, who ran PIMCO and was called the Warren Buffett of bonds. At his peak, he was managing $2
trillion. Trillion with a T. Like, that's more than most countries' GDP. The guy was basically the bond market.
The book tells his story. How he built PIMCO from nothing into this absolute powerhouse. His investment strategies. His personality. His obsessiveness. And eventually his dramatic fall from grace.
It's part business book, part cautionary tale, part soap opera. It's honestly a really engaging read, even if you're not that into bonds.
So what are the key lessons for bond investors? What should people take away?
First and most important, understand duration risk. When interest rates go up, bond prices go down. That's the fundamental inverse relationship. If you buy a bond paying 3%, and then rates rise to 5%, your bond is worth less because new bonds are paying higher rates.
Which is super relevant in 2025, with the Fed having raised rates from near 0 to 5% over the past few years.
Exactly. People who bought long-term bonds in 2020 and 2021 when rates were near zero got absolutely crushed. When rates went up, some bond funds lost 20, 30, even 40%.
Which is supposed to be the safe part of your portfolio.
Right. It shows bonds aren't risk-free. They have interest rate risk. Gross was a master at predicting where interest rates would go. And positioning his portfolio accordingly.
Second lesson?
Bonds can be an active, profitable investment strategy. Gross didn't just buy and hold treasury bonds. He bought distressed corporate debt, emerging market bonds, mortgage-backed securities. He used leverage. He timed the market. He made active bets.
So bonds can be just as dynamic and potentially profitable as stocks if you know what you're doing.
Absolutely. But the third lesson is more of a cautionary tale about personality and ego. Gross was brilliant. But he was also difficult to work with. He had massive ego. He refused to adapt when the market changed. And ultimately that led to his downfall.
So even the smartest investors can destroy themselves if they let ego take over.
Right. The book is a reminder that intelligence isn't enough. You also need humility, adaptability, and the ability to work with others.
On the practical side, what should regular investors know about bonds in 2025?
Great question. For the first time in like 15 years, bonds are actually attractive again. You can get 4 to 5% yields on safe US Treasury bonds. That's a real return after inflation.
So the classic 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, actually makes sense again.
Exactly. For years, bonds were paying nothing. So that strategy didn't work. But now bonds are paying decent yields. They provide stability. They zig when stocks zag. It's worth having bond allocation again.
Key takeaway from the Bond King. Don't ignore bonds in your portfolio, especially as you get older. They provide stability, income, and diversification. Understand how interest rates affect bond prices. And don't let ego destroy your investment success.
Perfect. Book number 6. The Black Swan by Nassim Nicholas Taleb.
Okay, this book is wild. Taleb is brilliant, but he's also kind of a philosophical troublemaker who enjoys stirring things up.
Perfect description. So what is a black swan? It's a rare, unpredictable event that has massive, massive consequences. The term comes from history. Before Europeans discovered Australia in the 1600s, everyone in Europe had only ever seen white swans. They assumed all swans were white. It was like a fundamental truth of nature.
And then they found Australia and discovered black swans exist. Their entire assumption was shattered.
And Taleb argues that the financial markets, and really the world in general, is full of black swan events. Things that, quote, couldn't happen. Things that models said were impossible. Things that experts dismissed as having zero probability.
Like what? Give some examples.
The 2008 financial crisis. All the Wall Street models said it was impossible for housing prices to drop nationwide. The COVID market crash in 2020. Drop of 35% in a month. 9/11. Dot-com bubble bursting. These were all events that supposedly had infinitesimal probability.
But they happened, and they wiped out portfolios, destroyed companies, crashed markets.
Exactly. And Taleb's main point is, we're really, really bad at predicting rare events. Our brains aren't wired for it. We look at the past and assume the future will be similar. But black swans don't care about your models or your assumptions.
So how do you invest if you know that unpredictable, market-crashing events can happen at any time?
Great question. Taleb talks about this barbell strategy. It's actually pretty clever. Put most of your money, like 85 to 90%, in super, super safe assets. US Treasury bonds. FDIC-insured savings accounts. Money market funds. Things that basically cannot lose money.
Okay, so you're protected on the downside.
Right. Then you take the remaining 10 to 15% and put it in extremely risky, high upside bets, speculative stocks, options, crypto, startup investments, venture capital, things that could go to zero, but could also go up 100 times.
So you avoid the middle ground entirely.
Exactly. No supposedly safe corporate bonds. No balanced mutual funds. No medium risk stocks. Because Taleb argues that the middle ground gives you all the downside risk of a black swan event, but without the upside potential.
That's counterintuitive, but it makes sense. If a black swan happens, your safe government bonds will be fine. Your speculative bets might go to zero, but you only had 10% there. But you're also positioned to benefit if there's a black swan upside event.
Right. Like if you had 10% in Bitcoin in 2015. That tiny position would have made you wealthy. Or if you had some money in Nvidia or Tesla 5 years ago.
So in 2025, what does this mean practically for investors?
Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't assume the future will look like the past. Build a portfolio that's anti-fragile. That can actually benefit from volatility and chaos. Maybe keep some gold, some commodities, some alternative investments that tend to do well when everything else is crashing.
And most importantly, expect the unexpected. Don't be the person who says this time is different or that could never happen. Because black swans have happened throughout history and they will happen again.
Key takeaway from the black swan. Expect the unexpected. Build a portfolio that can survive and even profit from extreme rare events. Use the barbell strategy. And stay humble because the world is way more unpredictable than we think.
Love it. All right, last book. Number 7. The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel.
If you read one modern book from this list, make it this one.
I completely agree. This is probably my favorite book on the entire list. It came out just a few years ago, but it's already becoming a modern classic.
What makes it special is it's not really about finance or technical investing strategies. It's about the human behavior and psychology around money.
And Housel's main thesis is, doing well with money has very little to do with how smart you are, and a lot to do with how you behave. Your behavior is more important than your knowledge.
He's got all these incredible stories throughout the book. My favorite is Ronald Reed, the janitor from Vermont. This guy worked blue-collar jobs his whole life. Janitor. Gas station attendant. Never made more than minimum wage, probably.
And he died with an $8 million fortune.
$8 million. How? He just bought good stocks. Dividend-paying stocks, mostly. And held them literally forever. He never sold. He lived frugally. Saved consistently, reinvested dividends, and let compound interest work for 50 plus years.
Meanwhile, in the same time period, there are MBAs from Harvard and Stanford, people who are quote smart unquote, who go broke day trading or making risky bets.
The book is organized into 20 short chapters. Each one explores a different psychological principle. Let me give you some of my favorites. Chapter 1. No one's crazy. Everyone makes financial decisions based on their own unique experiences and perspective.
Which is why your risk tolerance might be completely different from mine.
Exactly. Someone who lived through the Great Depression will invest very differently than someone who grew up in the boom of the 90s. Neither is wrong. They're just shaped by different experiences. Chapter 6. Tails. You win. A small number of events account for the majority of outcomes.
Like in investing, a few big winners in your portfolio will drive most of your returns.
Right. Amazon. Apple. Google. If you owned these and held them for 20 years, these few stocks probably account for most of your wealth. Even if you own dozens of other stocks that did nothing.
What about the chapter on compounding? That's one of my favorites.
Confounding compounding. Yes. He shows why Warren Buffett is so wealthy. It's not because he's the best investor ever. There are people who have achieved higher annual returns than Buffett.
So why is Buffett so much wealthier?
Because he started young and compounded for 80 plus years. Buffett's been investing since he was a child. If he had started at age 30 instead of age 10, he'd have like 1% of his current wealth, even with the same returns.
So time in the market is more important than timing the market.
Exactly. Another favorite chapter, getting wealthy versus staying wealthy. These require very different skills. Getting wealthy requires taking risks, being optimistic, putting yourself out there. Staying wealthy requires humility, frugality, and paranoia about what could go wrong.
That's so true. I've seen people make a fortune in a bull market, get overconfident, take massive risks, and lose it all in the next crash.
Tons of examples throughout history. And then there's the chapter called Freedom. Housel argues that the highest form of wealth isn't a big house or a fancy car. It's controlling your time, being able to wake up and say, I can do whatever I want today.
Money is a tool to buy freedom and options, not stuff.
Exactly. And he says the hardest financial skill is getting the goalpost to stop moving. You make 100,000. You want 200,000. You make 1,000,000. You want 5,000,000. You buy a nice house. You want a bigger house. It never ends unless you consciously decide what enough means for you.
There's always going to be someone richer, someone with a fancier car, a bigger house. If you're constantly comparing yourself to others, you'll never be satisfied.
Never. And then one of my favorite concepts from the book, reasonable versus rational. He argues that investing isn't about being coldly, mathematically rational. It's about being reasonable in a way you can emotionally stick with over decades.
Can you explain that more?
Sure. The purely rational strategy might be 100% stocks always, because historically they have the highest returns. But if you're going to panic and sell during a crash, that strategy isn't reasonable for you. Better to have 70% stocks, 30% bonds, even though it's technically less optimal, if it means you'll actually stick with it.
So the strategy you can maintain is better than the theoretically perfect strategy you'll abandon.
Exactly. Which is why someone who invests in a simple, boring index fund and never sells will beat someone with a sophisticated, optimized strategy that they can't emotionally handle during market volatility.
For 2025, why is this book so essential right now?
Because we're in such a weird, uncertain environment. Inflation fears, political polarization, AI disruption, geopolitical tensions, wars. It's easy to make emotional decisions. Panic sell. Chase hot stocks. Try to time the market.
This book teaches you to zoom out. Focus on timeless principles. Define what wealth means to you personally. And not get swept up in short-term panic or greed.
Key takeaway from The Psychology of Money. Your behavior matters more than your IQ. Stay humble. Be patient. Focus on what you can control. Define what enough means for you. And remember, getting rich is one thing. Staying rich requires completely different skills.
Wow, we covered a lot. 7 incredible books.
Each one approaches investing from a completely different angle. Active stock picking versus passive indexing. Stocks versus bonds. Technical analysis versus fundamental value. Market efficiency versus behavioral psychology.
So let's do a comprehensive recap for our listeners. If you're taking notes, here are the 7 books with their main lessons.
1. One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. Main lesson. Invest in what you know. Use your everyday observations to find investment opportunities. You have advantages that Wall Street doesn't have.
2. The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. Main lesson: value investing and margin of safety. Only buy when price is significantly below intrinsic value. Don't let Mr. Market's emotions control your decisions.
3. A Random Walk Down Wall Street by Burton Malkiel. Main lesson: markets are efficient. Most active managers underperform. Index funds are probably your best bet unless you're willing to do serious research.
4. The Little Book of Common Sense Investing by John Bogle. Main lesson: costs are the enemy. Minimize fees. Minimize trading. Minimize taxes. Time and compound interest are your friends.
5. The Bond King by Mary Childs. Main lesson: don't ignore bonds. They provide stability and income. Understand interest rate risk. And don't let ego destroy you.
6. The Black Swan by Nassim Taleb. Main lesson: rare. Extreme events happen more often than we think. Build an anti-fragile portfolio. Use the barbell strategy. Expect the unexpected.
And 7. The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. Main lesson: behavior beats intelligence. Define what enough means for you. Be reasonable, not just rational. And remember that time is more valuable than money.
If you could only read one book from this list, which would you personally choose, Jordan?
Oh man, that is so tough. They're all valuable for different reasons. Gun to my head, I'd probably say The Intelligent Investor just because it's so foundational. Like, if you understand value investing and margin of safety, you have a framework that works for everything.
That's a great choice. For me, it's The Psychology of Money. Because honestly, even if you know every investing strategy in the world, if you panic sell during crashes, if you chase hot stocks, if you can't control your emotions, you're going to fail.
Totally fair. And honestly, reading all 7 would give you such a well-rounded perspective. You'd understand active and passive strategies, stocks and bonds, technical and psychological factors, risk and opportunity.
Here's my challenge to all our listeners. Don't just listen to this episode and forget about it. Take action. Pick 2 books from this list, buy them this week. Physically buy them or get them on Kindle or check them out from the library.
And then actually read them over the next month. Not skim them. Really read them. Take notes. Highlight passages. Think about how the principles apply to your situation.
And most importantly, apply at least one lesson from each book to your portfolio. If you read Lynch, maybe identify one stock in your everyday life and research it. If you read Bogle, maybe check what fees you're paying and switch to lower cost options.
Because reading without action is just entertainment. The value comes from actually implementing what you learn.
And here's the thing. These books are cheap. You can get all 7 books for probably less than $150 total. Some are in the public library for free. Some have audiobook versions.
And that $150 investment in books and knowledge could be worth millions to your portfolio over your lifetime, or save you from million-dollar mistakes.
It's literally the best return on investment you'll ever get. Warren Buffett says the best investment is in yourself, in your own knowledge and capabilities.
So true. All right. That's going to wrap up this very special episode. We hope you found it valuable. We hope it inspired you to dive deeper into investing education.
If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us reach more traders and investors like you.
Share it with a friend, a family member, a colleague who's interested in investing or wants to get started. This episode is evergreen. It'll be valuable whether someone listens today or a year from now.
And tomorrow, don't worry, we're back to our regular format, market analysis. real stock data, AI predictions, options picks, all the things you love about our daily episodes.
But we might do more special episodes like this if you guys enjoy them. Let us know. Drop a comment. Send us an email at info@sdpanthers.com. Tell us what topics you'd like us to cover.
Until tomorrow, happy reading, happy investing, and remember, the best investment is in yourself.
See you tomorrow, market enthusiasts.
Take care.